Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Scott.
So I understand that one of your recent conversations was so good that you are airing part two, a sequel, a follow-up.
That is right. Why have one when you can have two? So a few weeks ago, we aired this conversation that I had with comedian and podcaster Duncan Trussell.
That was the really powerful conversation about his talks with his mom as she was dying.
Yeah, she was a psychiatrist. She was someone who had thought a lot about spiritual, transcendent issues over a lifetime. And I wanted to talk with Duncan about what he gleaned from her, what kind of wisdom he took away from those conversations in particular.
I realized she's telling me things that she knew I would want to hear later.
Yeah.
And that she knew I wasn't hearing now.
Yeah.
And because she knew I would listen to it later. So I'm so grateful to her for that.
So that conversation was about what Duncan had learned from his mom and about grief. This time, we are pivoting, and the focus of this conversation is about the wisdom that Duncan himself has to share with all of us.
All right, let's give it a listen.
From what I know of you, you're definitely a person who likes to swim in the existential goo, you know?
I do.
When did that start for you? I mean, did you come out of the womb that way?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember. You know, if I meditated more, maybe I could answer that question. But I always gravitated towards it for some reason. So I've always loved it. You know, I was raised as an Episcopalian. And mm-hmm. as a kid, I really loved that and felt very connected to God and Jesus. And then after my mom's divorce, this was during the New Age movement. So she had like a series of New Age boyfriends, Birkenstocks, didn't like my fake guns. And I mean, obviously, like, you don't like your mom's boyfriend. If you do, like, what's wrong with
right,
you?
How
could you possibly like the guy who's walking out of your mom's bedroom in the morning? But what was wonderful about that is that got my mom interested in some esoteric philosophies, and which meant there were books laying about. And so, you know, I did the thing everyone does. I just sort of dabbled with it and went in and out of it. And, you know, I remember my mom's breaking up with a boyfriend who introduced us to all this stuff. He's on the back porch. I think she just dumped him. And I'm sitting back there. He's smoking a cigarette. He looks at me and he's like, you know, the stuff that we all talk about, one day you're actually going to need it. One day you'll need it. Right now you just think it's cool, but one day you'll need it. And yeah, and then my mom died way down the line. I mean, not that day, like years and years later.
That would have been
really weird.
Yeah.
And then that's when I remembered him saying that. And it's because suddenly it gets real. I got testicular cancer. Then it gets real. Now all of a sudden it isn't. You realize like there is a real need for some kind of transcendent structure, something outside of the world to connect to when you're, you know, in a tsunami of unfortunate events. And so then it got real for me.
What do you think about reincarnation?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, subjectively, I'm not going to get any debates with anybody about it. You will win. I have the most cynical, materialist, existentialist, intellectual friends. I try to bring this stuff up with them, and they destroy any argument I have. And I like that. It's like, all right, I don't know. I've got, you know, all I can say is this is my fantasy. I think that people who are nihilistic, materialist atheists don't realize that they believe in heaven too. Their heaven is like the heaven of pure, absolute, perfect annihilation. Who was it?
Huh.
The one who, Hemlock, Socrates, was that Socrates or played Socrates?
I think Socrates.
Okay, this Apology of Socrates, he said something along the lines of, if there's nothing after this, and it's like the deepest sleep, then you have given me the greatest gift anyone could give anyone. If there is something after this, I'm going to keep doing the thing that you're giving me hemlock for. So I win no matter what. It's really a great, great, great. He did a good job. He was pretty smart, but he was okay.
I mean, I guess.
He had some good ideas. But yeah, so I think that, yes, I completely believe in reincarnation. I feel like a kind of certainty about it. And yeah, I don't really have any part of me anymore that doesn't believe that.
How far does the fantasy extend? I mean, does it get specific? Like, do you have a preference for the next go round? Like plant, animal, human? Because I'm the kind of person who thinks I want to come back as something more interesting than a human being.
Like,
but if
what?
It really gets down to brass tacks, I don't. Like, I just want to be a person who can still be in the peripheral life of, like, my loved ones.
Sure.
Not very interesting. Like, I'd like to be a person who's like, I'm going to be the tree, or I want to be a bird. And I don't want
to
be
the Who wants to be a tree? Are you kidding? You want to be some immobile thing that people use as firewood? No, thanks. Passing on the tree.
But they're supposed to be old and wise and, like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, they might be old and wise, but there's not much they could do. And some lumbered person decides to use them for their table. I'm not dissing trees. My God, I wish they could attack. If trees could attack, we'd live in a much more beautiful world. The point is, I think that I like the Buddhist emphasis on, okay, what we need to worry about is right now. Because, and I've heard something on the lines of, if you want to know what your next incarnation is going to be, look at your incarnation now, and that will inform you where you're headed.
In what way? What does that mean?
Momentum. So it's like we're talking about the reaction. So when those moments where the thing comes out of you that you've been working on, and then suddenly there it is again, blah, the jack-in-the-box comes out in traffic, in a relationship, whatever your particular scary defense mechanism
trigger,
thing is,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trigger. This is what will carry you into the next life. And you're going to react to the scary things there the way you react to scary things here. You're probably going to get scared. Then you're going to get angry. Then you're going to just do the exact same thing that has been getting you in all the samsaric loops you've been getting in here. You know, I used to be like, I guess I'm just always getting in this relationship. You know, wow, this is mysterious. Why does the same exact relationship keep happening to me? You know, with nothing to do with me, just like Bermuda Triangle stuff. You know, it's like some kind of, what is it? Mercury must be in retrograde every time I get in a relationship. You know, so if you haven't started unraveling that loop, the loop will repeat and that loop will inform your next incarnation. Uh-huh. And so that's, I think, a way to sort of wrap your head around it. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter because you reincarnate in this life. That's what you need to worry about is your next incarnation here.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, you reincarnate.
Just like change. Not 100%. Just change, but big change.
I used to wear trench coats and listen to the Smiths. I was a goth. I was just sour when I was in high school. And just, I went through that phase. That me is still in me. Oh, God, I'll listen to the Smiths sometimes. Like, this is amazing. But that level of sort of like LARPing as
LARPing,
sort,
that's a great word.
Yeah. I'm not doing that LARP anymore. I'm doing a new LARP now. And so. That's what I think that might as well be reincarnation.
Rebirth.
Physically, I'm different. Yeah. Mentally, I'm different. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's different now. So that's what I mean. You reincarnate, you know, over and over again here. The cycle is happening here. It just keeps going after you die.
Your mom points out in that interview, and forgive me if I'm not quoting her right, but she said something to the effect of any kind of spiritual life, the only point of a spiritual life is to just learn how to live in reality.
Yeah.
So it's just, how is this helping me just be a person in the world?
Yeah. Very, very, like, it reminds me a little bit of Zen, just very, like, you know, no BS, like, let's, you know, this is what's happening. This is what's happening here, right, in this place. And then it's like, okay, you know, you come to someone's house and they have a nice couch.
Yeah.
And they've put plastic over the couch. You've ever seen that? It's the wildest thing.
Like if they have people, a pet?
They don't want to soil their couch stranger's oils or whatever they're worried about. So they cover it in plastic, and now it could be the best couch on earth. But now it's the worst couch because it's covered in like plastic. It's venting. It smells weird in the winter. Like the plastic is like kind of sort of melting. You're breathing in toxic fumes.
Right. And so, it's not living up to its couchiness potential. Like
it could be the best couch. Velvet or some nice leather. But no, all you're feeling is plastic. So I think this is what my mom was talking about, and what the invitation is from a lot of these people is, you've put plastic on you. And it's keeping you from a direct encounter with reality. And you think it's protecting you. It's not. Here you are in this beautiful, powerful, heartbreaking, unbearably heartbreaking reality. Like, mm-hmm. This is the real thing. You took human birth. In Buddhism, there's more gods than there are humans. Like, you have taken human birth, and you are here, and this isn't like, you're not in the driveway. Like, you're in the forge. Like, this is it. So learning how to deconstruct, dissolve, remove, or allow the plastic to exist, but simultaneously allow your heart to touch what's happening now as it is, whatever your method may be, is so wonderful, because you get to experience this world that we're in as it is. And one of the, I think, great delights that everyone realizes is you were running away from the best couch. Okay, the ant analogy is ruined now. The couch has been chasing you. This is like a story I tell my kid. The couch, don't run away from your nice couch. Don't run from your couches.
So is your, not to extend the awkward metaphor, but is your couch covered in plastic? Are you the couch you want to be in the world, in the apartment of your life?
No. I'm right now learning how to shake hands with the plastic, I guess is the way you put it. Like, because I love, like Pema Chodron, she says in her book, The Wisdom of No Escape, people will start some meditation practice wanting to be better, to be a better person, be a better parent, be a better this, be a better that. And she says, that's starting your practice off with an aggression against yourself. You know what I mean? This as you are thing that's been carrying you to the point of getting a Pema Chodron book or this or that.
I just have to say this. Pema Chodron is a renowned Buddhist scholar and monk. Yeah.
Yes. Great teacher. And, you know, it got you to Pema Chodron. It got you to whatever your particular, you know, practice is. So, and then suddenly you're like, all right, see you later. Like, get out of here, thing that has sustained me, protected me. Get out of here. That's the aggressive part. And it shows up in the psychedelic world sometimes. You know, people come back from the whatever the particular experience they had, and they're like, I shattered my ego. It's like, why are you being so mean to yourself? Like, you shattered your... It's not cool. It's like, that's you too. The plastic is you, and the sort of... the method that I've been taught is more like non-judgmental awareness. Mm-hmm. Allow it to be this thing.
So ego death is not a thing for you. That's like, feels violent. People talk about needing to kill your ego in order to be.
Yeah. So shake hands with it. Touch it. Don't be afraid. And don't like reject it. You've been, you know, and then maybe something will begin to like shift over time.
That was comedian and podcast host Duncan Trussell speaking with Rachel Martin for her Enlighten Me series. If you'd like to listen to the first part of their conversation, which I highly recommend, you can find that by going to npr.org and searching for Enlighten Me.